How you doing? Always. No rest. Zeph?
Yeah. Now I'm going to the band practice with the rabbi.
What?
Do you want chunk of goldfish?
No, thank you. What are you looking for? I need something to lean this on. Is this theirs?
Yeah. You can take it, I'll give it back.
No, that's it. It's not that. I'll get something else. Okay. I'm gonna get something to lean it on. Okay, everybody ready? Three, two, one. Okay, we'd like to thank Karen and Jake Abelevis for sponsoring this morning's Lox and Learn Lehilu and Nishmas, Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah ben Avram, and Karen's brother Yoshua ben Shimon Dov, the Neshama should have an Aliyah. Okay, so we have a new Mishnah in front of us. Mishnah, thank you. Here's page 3, so pass this around. No, none of you have this. Pass that, and pass that. This is page 3. Okay, so we're doing a new Mishnah today, and the Mishnah is somewhat of an idea continuation from last week's Mishnah. If you weren't here, don't worry about it, but if you were here, we will be asking to see if we can analyze or contrast or see the difference between this morning's Mishnah and last week's Mishnah. Remember, last week's we did two Mishnayos. We did Mishnah 2 and Mishnah 6 in the third parak. And what was the main themes of the Mishnayos? What was the main idea that we're talking about? Hasn't been that long of a week, right? Main idea: people who are sitting and So a difference between people who are sitting and learning versus people who are sitting and just wasting time. And the end off was that people who are sitting and learning, even if you're by yourself, the Shekhinah's with you, we contrast that, you get reward, you get Shekhinah, whatever. Big point is, when you're sitting in a group, you should be learning Torah. So that is not fundamentally different. Actually, Laser foreshadowed this week's Mishnah, that this Mishnah is talking about something similar. So let's see this Mishnah. On the top of page 1, where it says source A, chapter 3, Mishnah 3, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says, Shlosha Sha'achlu. As we read it, think about how it contrasts with last week's Mishnah. Shlosha Sha'achlu, three people who, how would you translate Sha'achlu? Who ate. Sounds past tense. Shlosha Sha'achlu, three people who ate al Shulchan Echad, on one table. Velo amru alav divrei Torah, and they did not say on it, meaning on the table, divrei Torah. It sounds like some sort of metaphorical way of saying you didn't say a dvar Torah while eating. So what is your judgment? Ki'ilu achlu mizibchei mason. It is as if they have eaten from the, what's a zibchei mason? What's a zebach? A korban, so some sort of sacrifice. A sacrifice of dead animals. Zibche Mason. Does that sound like a good thing? No. Yeah, so it's a pretty bad judgment for those who have eaten and have not recited a Dvar Torah. Shenamar, in the quote of Pasuk, as we mentioned last week, we could also analyze the content of the Pasuk that's brought as a proof. Sometimes the proof is more clear than others. Sometimes we can analyze the proof Pasuk to teach us some more lessons. For now, we're just going to read it. The pasuk says, "Shenamar ki kol shulchanos malo ki tzoa bli makom." There's all their tables were filled with, pardon the words, filled with vomit, and there was excrement all over the place. It doesn't sound like such a good table to be sitting at. So that is the comparison to zivchei mason. If you don't learn at your table, it's not such a good place to be. Aval, so then the contrast to that. So that's if you don't do it right. What if you do it right? Aval shosha sha'achu al shulchan afa. Three who ate on one table. The amru al lav divrei Torah, and they said a dvar Torah. Ki'ilu achu mishulchanu shemakom. So that's as if you have eaten from the table of God. Baruch Hu she'amar v'yedaber elai zeh ha'shulchan asher lifnei Hashem. This is the table before God. So we have a contrast, big picture, we have a contrast between three who are sitting at a table and say a Dvar Torah versus three who are sitting at a table and do not say a Dvar Torah. One is really good, one is really bad. Big picture. Now let's go to the small picture. What about the nuances? So what, when reading this Mishnah, what questions popped into your head? What questions popped into your head?
Why three?
Why three? Good. Does the same thing apply to two? What if I'm by myself? What about 10? What about 15? Yeah, good. Okay, why are we focusing on eating? That's a good point. Remember last week we were just talking about three people sitting. So now we're talking about three people eating. So what's fundamentally different between three people sitting and talking versus three people sitting and eating? And will that have any influence on how we're going to understand the main message of the Mishnah? Okay, so three people is a Zimun, so maybe that's relevant.
What constitutes a Dvar Torah? I know my son always, whenever there are three men, he'll always go, Mayim Akonim Tova, and that's a Dvar Torah.
So what's considered a Dvar Torah? Does just saying three words, that it's your obligation to recite, does he do Mayim Achronim, or does he not do Mayim Achronim?
Yes,
okay, because you could say Mayim Achronim Chova, that's a whole, it's a whole siman in Shulchan Aruch, that you have to do Mayim Achronim, but then the custom for lots of people is not to do it. So technically you can say Mayim Achronim Chova, that's your Dvar Torah, and then not actually do the Mayim Achronim because your custom's not to. But yeah, so good. What constitutes a Dvar Torah? Okay, so maybe the eating is a clue that it's a longer time, so maybe that's the difference. Okay, perhaps. So you're trying to start answering the questions. Good. David?
Why does the Mishnah start off with negative eating?
Okay, that's a good pedagogical point. Why does the Mishnah start with the negative? It should have started with three people who are sitting together and learning, it's awesome, and three people who are sitting and eating together and didn't learn, that's terrible. So why start off with the negative? That's a fair question. Not sure we'll see an answer to that. Bad news first. We gotta end on a good note. Okay. All right. So these are all good questions to ask. So now let's start with part one here. Why three? You should know that there are some who say that three is not meaningful, and it's true even by two. It's true even by one. That's not the point. It just chose three because perhaps for just a logistic reason that usually three people are sitting and eating together for a zimun. But the same it would be true with two. The same would be true even if you're by yourself, you're sitting and eating and you don't have a Dvar Torah, you're not thinking or saying a Dvar Torah, it would be just as problematic. But most commentators say that three is said specifically. So why is three said specifically? What's the significance of three? So look at source number one. This is Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Rav Shimon Omer, Shlosha sha'achlu al shulchan v'lo amru alav divrei Torah, three who ate and didn't say a Dvar Torah, ki'ilu achu mezivchei mesim, it's as if they ate from this sacrifice of dead. Rotza lomar. So here's the explanation. Ki kol shulchanos harehen ki ilu malo tikro bes avodas kochavim shenichshavas kitzoa lufi shlo amru alav divrei Torah. If you don't say a Dvar Torah, it's as if you are. He's adding another element in here that it's a idol worshipping sacrifice. And so that wasn't necessarily explicit when it said zivchei mesim, but he's telling us, he's cluing us in that the reference to zivchei mesim means that it's like idol worship. You're sitting and on a table that's filled with idol worship. Lefi shelo amru alav divrei Torah. Why? So what's the reason? Ki yeshivas shlosha anashim nikres chabura. So he says that when three people are sitting together, that's already considered a group. It's a chabura. And now there's a fundamental difference between a chabura, a group, and a non-chabura, less than a group. Once you're a chabura, then things are more serious. Shehem mizamnim b'birchas hamazon, as Freddie said, that they have a zimun, they have to recite birchas hamazon with a zimun. The aimless chaber lahem, the aim divrei Torah b'neiem, she prikas ola Torah, she'ochlim v'shosim v'nanin, v'zacharta Torah lo tala alavavam, oy lahem, Oila Nasam. So if three people are sitting and it's a chabura, and it's already now it's a matter of substance, right? That's what the three is significance. It's the significance of people sitting and they can't think, they can't say a Dvar Torah, it's as if they're forgetting about God. Now, is eating essential to this? And so nothing specifically here is important about eating. It's three people who are together. Yes, we are talking about the context of eating, but it's probably just the same message as last week. Three people are hanging out and they're not saying Divrei Torah. That's a problem. So now we're saying the same thing. Three people are eating and don't say Divrei Torah. That's a problem. But it doesn't sound like, at least as of right now, that there's anything fundamentally significant to the fact that they're eating. Yeah. What? They're enjoying the eating. Right, so they're okay, but you can enjoy schmoozing too, right? So not so much. Depends on the person. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people, if they may seem, that could be dead people too. Throw it on there. Dead people, dead animals, whatever you want. Yeah. Right.
When you do a mishpat, you need three shoftim.
Mm-hmm.
A basic thing. You have three. So in the starboard, so now you have a zimun is three, the great Torah is three, shoftim is three. Starboard, which came first?
So what came first? Okay, but at the same time. But remember last week we talked about the significance of numbers. So you can start putting together a whole thesis where you start pulling, what do we have of threes? Right? So you have, what do we have as threes? Three Avos. You have Kohen Levi Yisrael. You have Beis Din. You have Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim. Right? You could already start putting together a whole thesis of why three is significant and what that has to do with this. You could do that. We're not going to do it. Some of the commentators do. But we're going to leave that for now. One more comment and we're going to keep going.
Would this be a focus between Rebbe or Hananya as to how many minimum people you have to have where it would qualify for this,
Right, so we don't have an answer yet, but part of what we're trying to figure out is this different than the previous Mishnah, right? Is the fact that we're introducing eating to this fundamentally different than what we discussed last week about three people just hanging out? Right?
But you were just saying before, perhaps, that it's not any different. We're just, that according to the Rebbe, it's just three people being together.
That's one way of reading it now. So we're not done yet. So we'll get this. But this is the background question that we're trying to develop. So look at source number two. The Tiferes Yisrael says, Nakot Gimel Sha'achlu. So he says specifically three. Specifically three. Why? And this is similar to something we said last week in a different context, but he says, "Debe'echad obeys she'achlu v'lo lamdu acharkach." One or two people they sat, they didn't learn afterwards. Yesomar shem ein lam pnai. They didn't have enough time. They're in a rush, right? Some of us, you're at work. You have 5 minute lunch break. You scarf down the food and then you go back to work. I don't have time, right? But now all of a sudden, what happens when there's three people? About gimel mistama yesh lahem pnai. Presumably, if three people decided to sit down together, they did that on purpose. They had some time to hang out together. They texted each other and they said, let's go out to eat. Now, I have time. Once I have time, now there's no excuse. What do you have to do with your time? You have to learn. You have to learn. So, notice as of now, another question we didn't ask, although we referenced it, it says that they ate. They already ate. So, and he's saying that you already ate and you said it. Why not while you're eating? Why not before you're eating? So right now we're assuming you've already eaten. I can't say a Dvar Torah while I'm eating. So we'll get back to that. But he says, so you've already, this one, Shema Ein Lam Pnai, about Gima Mistama Yesh Lam Pnai, Dim Lokein Loi Sivu Yachad, they wouldn't have sat together. Shaya Kol Echad Choshe Shema Yachdim Ligmor Sudasa Kodim L'chaber. So he adds, not just a social reason, but a halachic reason. What happens if three of us eat together? Presumably three men we're talking about. If three men are eating together, now what happens? Now you have a chiyuv of zimun. And if you have a chiyuv of zimun, now you're stuck. Right? If that ever happened to you, I don't know, again, I'm not sure the women could relate to this, but if you ever go to a minyan where there's only 10 people, right? And they're going slow and they're dragging out, right? You get very, very antsy because you're stuck. Now, that might be a bad mindset, but you're stuck. So same thing with three. You sit down to have a Zimun. You have to go into that knowing that you might get stuck because the other person might eat slower than you. They might not be in as big of a rush. Now you have to wait for the Zimun. So the assumption is that once you sit with three people together, you've already like thrown in the towel on your afternoon, right? You're stuck to them. You're not in any rush. So therefore, once you're not in any rush, the assumption is then you have to say it's bar Torah. Yeah.
I'm not going to be benching the Zuma with the intention of not. You don't have to stay there. You can walk out, even on the dump complete.
There are ways out of this, and there are ways you could try to convince the people that you know you want to leave, so that maybe they'll be mizan with you. Two can force one; one can't force two. We're not going to get to the law discussions now. But his point here is that the assumption is once you have three, your mindset was I'm in for the long run, right? So therefore, once I'm in, I'm not in a rush. I should be able to say a Dvar Torah as well.
But, okay.
We're not there yet. Okay, next. Laser. Part two. Thanks for the transition. Okay, part three. Part two. Look at source number three, Rashi. So what counts as learning? What counts as learning? So Rashi says, Lo amar olav divrei Torah, uregilim b'nei adam liftor asman b'berchas amazon. Benching is a Dvar Torah. Benching is a Dvar Torah. So you're done. So you don't have to say a Dvar Torah. You just have to bench. So what's the problem with that?
Benching is a mitzvah.
So benching is a mitzvah. This gets into a whole broader discussion. We're actually talking about it in the Thursday night Gemara here. Rabbi Doker is talking about the concept of Mikra Megillah when you're reading Megillah. Does Megillah count as learning Torah or not? Right? You're saying Tehillim. So Tehillim is part of Ksuvim. But we don't look at Tehillim as Torah. We look at Tehillim as Tefillah. Right? You say Pesukei Dezimra. Is that tefillah or is that Torah? So you're benching. Is benching it's just benching. Is that, what status does it have? Does it have a status of learning?
Wasn't Shira Ronald added to count as Zimun Torah before benching?
Was it?
That's what I heard. That's what I heard.
Sounds possible. Okay. But right now, according to Rashi, benching is enough. But I want you to think methodologically, why is that problematic?
Because why did it have to say it in
right, if Pirkei Avos is meant, and this is something we've mentioned in the past, if Pirkei Avos is meant to be a mile de chasidusa, something that goes above and beyond, something that, you know, we don't just say, Pirkei Avos isn't just telling us mitzvahs, it's telling us to be a little bit above, to do more, right? Then you don't need to tell me, Rabbi Shimon didn't tell me anything. He's telling me that we're critiquing people who don't bench? That's the message? But if you bench, you're awesome. You don't bench, you're not awesome. It doesn't sound like something you should say in Pirkei Avos. I don't need you to say that. It's a mitzvah. So that's the critique of Tosfos Yom Tov in source number four. It says, Mikol makom lo nesiyash v'dayti b'psak hazeh latzei sidei chobas v'kach. I don't think that this makes sense. Devada derbi Shimon lav v'halchim. Rabbi Shimon's not talking about benching. The atu b'rishiyai askinan, shenim mevarach and berchas amazon, is his whole intention to talk to people who aren't benching? They're rishayim? They're not benching? So he has to come and say, you're not benching? That's really bad. It doesn't sound like it's not the pshat. It's not what he's talking about. Shei mitzvos aseh min ha-Torah. U'mili de'avos, mili de'chasidos ninu. Pirkei Avos is something that's supposed to be about piety. K'damrim m'peraka ha-meniyach, man de'bal ma'abim chasidu l'kai mili de'avos. Lashon Rashi, we give it out to Mitzvah Atzma Berachas Amazon. He doesn't really get it. He doesn't understand why Rashi would say this, because it doesn't sound like the pshat, and it doesn't make sense that Rabbi Shimon would be talking about people who aren't benching. So halacha l'maisa, what do I do? Does benching count? Does it not count? Can I throw in this one-liner of, Mayim Achronim Chova? There was a story. It's brought down in the Pnine Hagra that they were eating with the Vilna Gaon at some point. Or at least the story came to the Vilna Gaon, and one of the students said, somebody has to say it's Dvar Torah. Because it says in Pirkei Avos, you have to say it's Dvar Torah. So the Vilna Gaon said, okay, that's it, you're done. Right? That's the Dvar Torah. You have to say it's Dvar Torah, that's the Dvar Torah. That's an equivalent of the Maya Machron and Chova statement. So halacha lemaisa, what do we do? Let's read the halacha and then we'll get questions. Look at source number 5. The Mishnah Berurah says, Ein masichin b'se'uda. So notice, there's a halacha that you're not allowed to talk during a meal. Why aren't you allowed to talk during a meal? Because you might choke. Right? So now, by Divrei Torah, we're very machmir about this, but for everything else, we talk about it. So it'd be one thing if nobody talked during while eating, but everybody talks during eating. So you should say Divrei Torah while you're eating too. But under the assumption that we don't talk while eating, right, that's the reason. I mean, the reason why it says achlu is, we foreshadowed this before, is because it's inappropriate, according to the halacha, to talk while you eat. Now, I'm just throwing out there that once you're talking anyway while you're eating, you should probably scatter some Divrei Torah in there as well. But the assumption is, the reason why it says achlu, is because it's inappropriate to talk while eating, because you might choke. So the Mishnah Berurah says here, Ein masichin b'se'uda, you can't talk while eating, afilu b'divrei Torah, even with Divrei Torah, v'davka b'shas achila, but that's only while you're eating, b'shas achila gufa, while you're actually, the food is, you're chewing, umishum sakana, because you might get hurt, you might choke, ukutulakame, as we're about to say, aval being tafshil to tafshil, you got your gefilte fish, and then you have your soup, and then you have, so in between the courses, mutter, you're allowed to talk. Now he says there's a mitzvah to say Divrei Torah on your table. It's as if you ate from this. He quotes our Pirkei Avos. And before we continue further, I just want to reflect on something that we actually have been talking about so far in the Monday night Rambam Shir. And that is, notice what happened. You have Pirkei Avos, which is, if you would have read this Mishnah, does it sound like a halacha, a law? What does it sound like? It sounds like advice. It sounds like strong advice. It sounds like a nice big punishment for not following through on a theoretical level, but it doesn't say you have to, right? But notice what the Mishnah Berurah just did. He said, U'mitzvah al kol adam. It's a mitzvah. So there's this fuzzy, like, in-between state of something that, where do you draw the line between a nice idea and something that I have to do? So the Mishnah Berurah goes and takes the jump and says, now you have to do this. This isn't just a nice idea. You have to, it's a mitzvah to do it. What does he mean by mitzvah? It sounds like it's a commandment. It's something that, not one of the taryag, but it's something that is necessary. So how do you, it's a big broad concept that comes up throughout Pirkei Avos, from when do you jump from it's a nice idea, it's a mile de chasidusa, it's piety, versus it's something you have to do. Right? You could ask the same, to phrase this in a different way, you could ask the same question that the Tosfos Yom Tov asked on the flip side. Remember, the Tosfos Yom Tov asks, how can it be that you're Yotze with Birchas HaMazon, right, and that's all we're talking about in the Mishnah. It doesn't make sense, because why doesn't it make sense?
Because
that's a requirement. And what's Pirkei Avos? Pirkei Avos is mile de chasidusa. It's piety. So on the other extreme, you can say, how can you tell me it's a law if Pirkei Avos is piety? Piety and law, are those the same thing? How do those interact together? So we're not going to answer this question now, but it's something to think about just as a broad theme. Where do you draw the line between some advice, some piety for Pirkei Avos, and when does it become necessary, required, a mitzvah, like the Mishnah Berurah said? Let's finish reading this Mishnah Berurah, and then I'll pause for questions. So he quotes here, "Because of Bishla, the Yilmod Mishnah o Halacha o Agado Sifrei Moser." So learn something. Beinu Yotze b'mashu mevarach Birchas HaMazon. So the Shla paskins that you do not, Birchas HaMazon does not count. Val kol panim yomar eza mizmor. So say something. Maybe it's what you're referring to before, friends. V'tov lomar achar Birchas HaMotzi mizmor Hashem roi lo achzar. Du dvar Torah tfilah mizonosa. So what did he just do? He just flipped it. When do you say this? When is it good to say this Hashem roi lo achzar? First of all, Tehillim. When is it good to say this Tehillim? Before, when you start, after Birchas HaMotzi, so you say Birchas HaMotzi, and then you say it before you eat. Presumably you ate the hamotzi, you pause, you say a Dvar Torah. So now we have two stages. There's a Dvar Torah that's before eating or while I start eating, and then there's a Dvar Torah while I finish eating. And you know, philosophically or takeaway, they both might have different messages. Do I start my meal with the Dvar Torah? Do I end my meal with the Dvar Torah? You can do both. But the point here is that there might be a different message to take away, but we'll get to that in part three when we talk about the main message. Yeah?
I want to say that looking at Rashi, he's not happy with the people that things have been cut from.
Okay, so Rashi's just telling you a fact. He's saying people count benching as this Dvar Torah, but he's not necessarily giving a stamp of approval that you should be doing that. That could be. Okay. That's a good point. Okay, so
the
right, so the question is, does singing count? And the Yavetz actually talks about this. Right, so the problem with, the possible problem with that is, does anybody actually know what they're saying? And are you aware that you're saying halachot? So you're good, right? But for other people, it might not be the case, right? So that's an interesting question. It's the same question with Tehillim. Am I saying this Tehillim as a Dvar Torah, or am I saying it as a tefillah, as a song? So I think it possibly depends on your mindset when you're saying it. But you're right. Sometimes if you analyze the Zemiros and you're thinking about the actual halacha, that could possibly count. Okay. So the question is, what's the main message? Why are we reading this? Is the message just learn Torah? Maybe. But then what's the context of food? What is that adding? So let's see source number 6. The Medrash Shmuel here quotes Rav Moshe al-Shakar, where he says, Baharav Rav Moshe al-Shakar zal perish Rav Shimon Omer tam smicho zeh inyan l'divrei Rabbi Hananya. So why is this next to what we said about Rabbi Hananya in the previous Mishnah? Lahoros lanu shitzarcha adam kodem shiyochal shiyikba itim l'Torah. So before you eat, we need to be aware that we need time to learn Torah. Does that have to do with eating?
No.
No, it has to do with the fact that we need to learn Torah. Uvishas ha'achila she'eino yachol liftoach sefer. While we're eating, you can't open up a sefer. Why can't you open up a sefer? You're eating. So you can't tell. I have this struggle with my daughter all the time. She always, like, she's eating, she's reading, like, she loves to read, so she's reading and she's eating at the same time. So she managed to figure this out. But I always tell her, you're going to get food on the book.
Right.
She doesn't care, so it doesn't matter. So she reads anyway. But apparently the assumption here was you can't read. Now, keep in mind, back then, it was probably a bigger problem. Anybody know why? The books were rarer, so you get a ketchup stains on it. You know, you can't just buy another one on Amazon. But there might have been another problem. Well, the lighting. Where does the phrase bookworm come from? I don't actually know. But I'm pretty sure that back then they used to get these like worms in the books. The quality wasn't as good. I'm not sure about that, but check it up. So it might have not just been that, you know, you might get the book dirty, but it could have been there was a health concern to not have books open at that time. Yeah. Maybe you'll get chametz in the sefer. Okay. Okay, good. So he says you can't open the book while you're eating. So you have to learn. So what are you supposed to do? You can't open up a sefer. So what are you supposed to do? You review what you already learned. If you came across something nice, you should tell your friend. When you do this, then you'll be able to accomplish this concept of knowing God in all your ways, even while you're eating, you're saying Divrei Torah. But notice, again, there's nothing fundamental about eating. It's just a matter of context. You can't open up a book. We know you have to learn. You have to set up times to learn. Here you can't open up a book because you're eating. So that's why you should talk in Divrei Torah. There's nothing food inherent related to the message. And I think that that's, you know, one way to read this. Is that we're just continuing. You're going from, I'm talking about learning in one setting, to learning in a different setting. But other commentators take it further. If you look now on the second page, source number 7, the wording here is hard to read, it's hard to make out. It's an old script, but we will do our best. So the Mili de Avos, it's writing in the 15th century, writes as follows. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shlosha Sha'achu al-Shulchan Echad, HaChacham Hazeh, Hu Rashbi. So number one, something that we did at the beginning of the series, we stopped doing to some extent, is to analyze the state, the people who are saying it. So the people, who's Reb Shimon? So a Stam Reb Shimon, if there's no reference to who it is in the Mishnah, is Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. So that might be relevant. Maybe at some point we'll go back to that style of also trying to figure out a little bit about what's relevant to the person who's saying it. But for today, we're just going to mention that it's Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. Shechiber b'ma'aram shenistar sham kama shanim. So he was in the cave, he was there for a while, and he was fleeing from the Kesar. So he's adding to what Rabbi Hanina said. Skip down to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th line, middle of the line. Ki lo dai shetzarech ha'adam ledaber b'divrei Torah b'eis ha'moshav. It's not enough to just say divrei Torah when we're hanging out. Ki gam be'eis... Anybody? Something hagufit. What? What is it? Hapnai? Really? Okay. I don't know. I'm not buying that. But that's something. Hazanat.
From a song.
Maybe. Could be. Point here is that you're dealing with bodily things. Okay. So there's one thing that you're doing with the hana. You guys are adding letters. You guys are adding letters in there. Okay, so something that's happening with your guf. Vahu, the next one's hana'at. Vahu hana'at ha'achila. So I'm getting benefit, pleasure from the food. Tzarech shiyachil l'nafsho ha'achila ha'hiya ruchanit. So when I'm eating, when I'm getting bodily pleasure, what else do I need to do? Spiritual pleasure. That's why I'm talking about three that are eating. So before we read the next line. So far he's adding some element of eating involved here. It's not just that it's coincidental. The eating is not essential like we've seen until now. The eating is essential because the eating is physical pleasure, and the Divrei Torah is counteracting that to some extent. They're saying, or a better word is supplementing that I also need to deal with my spiritual pleasures as well. But now notice what he quotes. He says here, V'yadua Kimosha Amar HaPhilosoph, as the philosopher said. Who's the philosopher? It could be Aristotle, but it could also be the Rambam, because the Rambam quotes Aristotle, so unclear who he's quoting here, but presumably the Rambam. Kichush hamishush cherpam lanu. Physical sense pleasure is an embarrassment. Ki eno lanu ella mitzad heyoso ba'ale chayim, lo mitzad heyoso anashim. So our bodily sense pleasure is animalistic. It's nothing to do with who we are as human. It's physical. V'chush hatam chelek mimenu, and taste is part of that. Ki eno masig chushav, maybe as an added letter there. Ki im be itush mimishush ve. So we have to minimize the amount of physical pleasure that we get. Below yifalbo the zulati hahechrati.
Just what's necessary.
Physical pleasures are problematic from this perspective, and you have to minimize it. Levad v'gam. Nasa shalakach ha'achrochi tzarech shiyadaber
When you do what's necessary, tzarech shiyadaber be. Anything? Something. Be muskal, right? You have to be intelligent. You have to use your seichel, basically. Laharot gam b'shah shehi she'ose ha'hi she'ose ma'ase behema shu bal seichel ma'asig b'machshava v'iyun. Right? So again, I didn't get every word, but it's okay, you don't get every word. You get the main idea. What is he saying? Physical pleasure is an embarrassment for us, but we have to do it, but we only have to do it on a minimal level. And when we do it, what's his important point? You have to add, you have to complement, you have to supplement a spiritual element in order that we're different than the animals and we're exercising our ability as humans to implement our seichel. So now the food is very relevant, right? The context of eating is important for this message of saying a Dvar Torah. It's not just that I need to spend time learning. I need to spend time learning specifically in the context of food in order to counteract this animalistic aspect of our being. So notice right now the message of the Mishnah is food bad, learning good. Food, I would say food bad.
It's
more than necessary. He said that it's a cherpa.
What about a necessary evil?
A necessary embarrassment, right? You have to eat because without eating, we're going to die because we are part animalistic, if you will. But it's not just, this is a negative, I'm reading this, I think it's pretty clear. This is a negative outlook on food and pleasure and taste. He probably would not approve of, you know, having 50 different types of cakes and cookies and you know, at every meal that we have. This is something that's a minimalistic because it's an embarrassment, something that we need to do. Hold on, questions. I want to contrast.
No, not a question. The Rambam. The Rambam sits down eating for so many years, he ate nothing. He ate cow and beef. So to him, food really was important.
Well, notice two things. Right? The Rambam spoke about eating healthy, and we'll have to come to Hilchos Deos on Monday nights. When we get to chapter 4, it's all about eating healthy. But the Rambam apparently held, and this is true, that physical pleasures are not one of our strong suits as human beings. These are things that it's a cherpa. So now, I want to use this as a contrast to the next point. Read number 8, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. This is a completely different outlook, completely different mindset. It's not a philosophical outlook that looks down on pleasure. It's actually more a Hasidic outlook that elevates pleasure. So look how Lubavitcher Rebbe presents this in source number 8. So he says, Hashelos b'mishnah seinu, number 1, the questions we have to ask is, why does it say hadiyuk shloshes aflu? Why does it say 3? Beis hadiyuk al shulchan echad, that's going to be very important to him. Why does it say they're eating on one table? Why is it specified? Okay, it could have just said Shosha Sha'achlu al Shulchan. Shosha Sha'achlu. Al Shulchan Echad, on one table. Why is it? It sounds like it's highlighting that aspect of one table. Hakesher Lebala Maimer. And then number 3 says, what's the connection to Rav Shimon ben Yochai? So now, Hamispar Shlosha Romez Lechibur V'ichud Elokut Im Olamot. So he says that 3 represents a symbolic of a connection and a unification of God with this world. Parentheses, Elokut, Olamot, Bechibur, Shnehem Yachad. So what's the 3? Godly, worldly, and the 3rd is the connection, the synthesis between those two together. V'kasher shlosha anashim yoshvim le'achol yachad. When 3 people sit down to eat together, hinei etzem heyosam b'mispar zeh, maskir u'me'orer chibur zeh. So the 3 is so significant, because once 3 are together, all of a sudden, like we said before, what does our mind jump to? If we're thinking on a Kabbalistic, mystical level, we're thinking about the connection between God and this world. Once 3 are together, boom. Me, world, God, together. Right, so anything. Now, again, that's the same point we made from last week about the number symbolism. Is that now, anytime you have 3, you can connect all these ideas together. So now, keep going. Be'etzem, So this is an interesting one. In the parentheses, it's a side point, but it's an interesting side point. Ba'etzem gam kishiyuhudi echad yoshev lechol. So why not one person sitting together? So he says the truth is, even that is bebechinat shlosha she'achlu. Even when one person sits and eats, it's as if three are sitting and eating. Why? Shekein yedu atorah sabal shem tov al apasuk. The pasuk says, Re'evim gam tzmeim nafsham behem tis'atav. When we're hungry, what is that representative of? Our neshama is hungry. When we're physically hungry, our neshama is hungry. So that, you know, we need to eat or drink. Move on, Efo, Shekasher Yehudi Ochel. When we eat, Yeshkan, what do we have? Three things. Achilas HaNeshama, the Neshama's eating. Achilas HaGuf, the body's eating. And then the connection, the Chibur Shnehem Yachad. So we have, even when I'm eating as a singular person, there's three elements: my Neshama, my Guf, and the combination of the three. Of the two, together. Behine, Amiras Divrei Torah El HaShulchan. When I say Divrei Torah on the table, Shekol Kol Tzarchei Adam, Mechaberes Elakus Divrei Torah Im Olamos Tzarchei Adam. So now I'm synthesizing, I'm combining the Dvar Torah, which is otherworldly, and this worldly, my necessary Tzarchei Adam, and that becomes a Shulchan Echad, HaChibur VaKishur Shel HaShulchan Im HaEchad. So now, the feeling you get from eating is so fundamentally different than what you got from the Rambam quoted in the Mila de Avos. What's eating in this thought process? It's positive. It's godly to some extent, right? It's an echad of combining my physical and bodily and neshama pleasures together. It's one conglomerate. It's together. This is not an embarrassment. It's a totally different feel that you get. So now the message of the Mishnah is that, not that eating is not holy, so I have to counteract it with holy. It's that eating and Divrei Torah are one totally powerful, awesome, amazing holiness. So of course I'm going to put those two together. Right? So one's like a counteracting, and one's a supplementing, if you will. So I think that's going to be the conclusion, especially when you talk about on the positive side, three that eat together, and then you have the Zeh Shulchan Shlifnei Hashem, is that it's a reference to that this is the Shulchan is like a Mizbeach. Yes, you'll see some. Yeah, so you'll see that. I don't know if I have it here, but some commentators deal with that as well. Okay, so I think you get a totally different picture from this, and let's see. Okay, skip number 9 and go to the last page. Is there an extra last page? Do you need one? Okay, so the last page, this is the last concept we're going to do for today. Does anybody else need their open? And that is the Medrash Shmuel source number 10. So he's going to pick up on a bunch of the themes that we spoke about until now and give, I think, a very important message for our own eating habits that we should take into account, to some extent at least. Hodianu v'hai dinakat sha'achlu. So why does it say in the past that they ate? Lashon avar, she'ein masichim besuda. As we said, you can't talk while you're eating. Inami. All another possibilities. Amar achlu, lashon avar. Lekavana acheres is a different message. V'yeduyak gam milas echad, and we're also going to focus specifically on the word echad one. Dekaamar shehimiuseres, as we've pointed out, it's extra. I don't have to say al shulchan echad. I just said al shulchan. Why echad? The Baba Terebi had his explanation. Medrash Shmuel is going to have a different one. Imasu shamati omrim al pasuk is a fascinating read. What does the pasuk say? Vavatem es Hashem elokechem uvarech es lachmacha vesmei mecha. So that pasuk is very strange. How does it start off with? Think singular and plural. Vavadtem, it starts with plural, serve God plural, and then how does it end off? singular, bless your bread and your water, singular. So why does it switch from plural to singular? Shenichnas b'lashon rabim ba'avadtem v'yatza b'lashon yachid. It starts with plural and ends with singular. D'kamar baruch eslachmach. Amna. So what's the message? Hishmi'anu shebe'inyon ha'tfila. When it comes to tefillah, when it comes to spiritual things, tovim ha'meruba min ha'yachid. The more the merrier. It's good to have numbers. Ki berovam hadras melech. The more people, the more honor it brings to God. Umi olam lo yisbal b'yachid. You shouldn't daven by yourself. Ki inyan panei el tefillas ha'orer. V'alken amar v'avadtem ki avoda zu tefillah. When it says avatem, it's a reference to avoda. Avoda we know is tefillah. Tefillah, spiritual things, should be done in rabbin. Amna, be'inyan ha'ma'achal, mi'olam lo yiskabtsu le'echol echad im chaveru. You should never eat with anybody else. You should never eat with anybody else. Let's see why. Ki me'olam lo yimshach shum davar tov mehitchabram le'echol b'yachad. It's a very strong statement. I'm not sure you have to agree with everything said here. But nothing good ever came out of people eating together. What does that mean? V'yoser tov hu shiyochal kol echad levado. It's better for you to eat on your own. Ulirmoz lezeh apke b'lashon yachid. And that's why now it goes from serving God in plural, the pasuk went, to eating is in singular. V'amar baruch eslach mechaves me'mecha. Do it on your own. Alkein amar b'kan shlosha sha'achlu. That's why it says here three that ate. Kilomar. Ha'emes v'atov haya shelo yochlu al shulchan echad. They shouldn't have eaten together. That's why it says achlu in the past, it's b'di'evet. It's they already did it. But if you would have asked me, he says, in the beginning, should they have eaten together, I would have told you no. Okay, they already did it. So say it's Dvar Torah. Amna mim kfar ira sha'achlu al shulchan echad tzarech shiyomar alav divrei Torah. He says it slowly starts. You start with it. You tell me it's not. You can tell me it's a sin to eat with somebody else. It starts slowly. Eventually, we dissipate into the world. Etc. What's his problem with eating together? What's his problem? Right? Lashon hara. What else? Bittul Torah, distraction. So I'm going to give you a different idea here, and that is the concept of social eating, right? So if you're trying to, you know, try to go on a diet, right? So one of the things about going on a diet, and we've spoken about this numerous times, is not just what you're eating, it's how you're eating it. What's the context of your eating it? Our cues in our environment triggers the amount and content of food that we're going to eat. So when we, if you look in the, there's something called mindless eating. When I eat, I'm not paying attention to what I'm eating. One of the, there are two main times where people eat mindlessly. What are the two times? Number one is when they're watching TV, right? You have, or reading, right? You're not paying on the computer, whatever you do, you're not focusing on what you're doing, but you're eating. You're not looking at cues, physical cues to what you're, when you're stopping to eat. You're looking at when is this show over as a cue to get up and get more food, right? But what's the other one? When you're in social groups. And we've all experienced this. We eat more than we need to if we're with other people. You're sitting and you're schmoozing, you're hanging out. Even in good context, you're at a kiddush, and all of a sudden, the meal's dragged on. It's taking longer than expected. There's food there. Everybody else is eating. Everybody else is eating that unhealthy thing. Everybody else is drinking. And even though I'm trying to watch how much I'm drinking, but everybody else is drinking. So you feel that social pressure. And we're looking at the social cues in order to decide what we're going to eat and how much we're eating. And the truth is, I said that, we're not even deciding. We're just doing it, right? It's all, it becomes part of the context. It becomes part of the social environment. So
why don't you asser this kind of food?
Asser?
Asser. I say you cannot have this kind of food. They have the minimum.
When was the last time assering something worked?
Okay. When was the last time?
So the question is, to what extent, I think that if you want to take the Medrash Shmuel here, there is a value in eating together. There is a value in creating community together through eating. But there's also a danger to it, both in terms of our physical health as well as to our spiritual health. So I'm not saying only eat alone. It's good to eat with together. It's good to have people to talk to. When you do that, make sure you add a Dvar Torah in there. But I think it is also important to realize that we shouldn't necessarily be cueing into other people when we're deciding what to eat and how much to eat, or what to drink and how much to drink. We should be able to try to have the amount of willpower to say, this is what I'm eating, this is my portions, this is the content of what I'm eating. And just because everybody else is eating more, or the meal is dragging on and everybody's talking, doesn't mean I have to keep eating just because the food is there. To try as much as we can to limit the downsides of eating alone. So this way we could eat for health purposes. We could eat the minimum because either you look at it as the fact that our body is an embarrassment, if you will, like the Rambam, or you look at it as that even if it's a spiritual thing, that doesn't mean you have to stuff your face, right? There's that at some point it goes from a spiritual endeavor to something that's just fulfilling your bodily pleasures, and I think even in the Hasidic thought that would be problematic. Right, so at a certain point, when you transfer over from it being spiritual to being this tastes good, or this is just there, so I'm going to eat it, that loses its spiritual content according to everybody. So the main message, we'll take questions in a second or comments in a second, but the main message today is make sure while we're eating to introduce some Divrei Torah, because either we're counteracting the fact that eating itself is physical, so we need to add spiritual, or that we can make or continue to make eating, which could be looked at as a spiritual pursuit, even more spiritual, give it that stamp of approval that this is something that we can combine with Torah. And to the extent that we can eat the appropriate amount without looking into social cues, I think we'll all be better off. Yeah, Barbara. Yeah, no, it's definitely an element of it, and there's something about, you know, smorgasbords and being able to have a little bit of everything that makes you eat much more than you actually need to. But that itself is an environmental cue. Might not, you're right, it's not just the fact that there's a lot of people there, but it's the fact that I'm looking to my eyes, I'm looking to the variety to make my decision instead of, am I hungry or am I not hungry? Is this going to help me serve God better, or is this not going to help me serve God better? Right? And if the answer is it's not, then I should try to stay away from it. Yeah.
See, I would have interpreted the pasuk when it went from the plural to the singular is that initially everyone came from a different mindset. And then when they came together to the temple, they were focused and they ended up with one mindset. And they were focused on exactly what they're doing, not the way that it's counted. I think it is definitely a positive statement, saying that, yeah, we're coming from the
and we break bread together. That could be. Again, I think that's a fair, you could, ma'am, and the rabbi's drasha yesterday was to some extent encouraging the fact that there is a community building aspect to being able to eat together, and you could create connections while you're eating together. I would just argue that in that context, the Dvar Torah should be present, and we should also watch what we eat and drink. You know, it's more dangerous, if you will. Yeah, I mean, but again, to be clear, you could overeat by yourself too, and sometimes that could be problematic when nobody else is looking. The social pressure could help you control yourself better. So context obviously matters. Yeah.
Many things that we specifically don't do all the time because it is a minhag of avelus.
I hear you. Again, he came out a little bit strong in the fact that he said it's never, it was like very strong language. It's never good to eat, you know, to eat with people. It was a little bit over the top to some extent, but I still think take away the important part of the message is that, at least the way I'm doing it, is that you also have to be careful when you're eating in social aspects. You would never tell somebody who's struggling to, you know, who's trying to make friends and trying to be part of a community, you know, make sure you eat alone. Right? You never tell somebody who needs human connection and is feeling depressed, you know, make sure you eat alone. Right? So obviously context matters, but I think that the takeaway of being careful not to eat or drink too much just because you're in a social context is important. And to be clear, he didn't say that explicitly either. He doesn't tell you what, unless I missed it, I don't think he tells you specifically why. No, I don't think he says why you shouldn't eat alone. He just says don't do it. Yeah. I hear you. I don't think that's what he's saying, but I think that you could say that too. I mean, you could also interpret him as that he's going along with this idea of eating being an embarrassment. And once eating's an embarrassment, do you do embarrassing things, you know, in front of other people having a good time? No, you do it alone. You do it in private. So that's if you equate eating with something that's a physical embarrassment, then you do it like you don't go to the bathroom in public, you go to the bathroom in private. Do you eat in private? I think that's could be another interpretation of what he's saying. Okay, last comment, then we're gonna bench.
It's not only embarrassment, it's surprise. It's a terrible, terrible thing. You're really sinning.
I don't think it's a sin. No, the Rambam wouldn't tell you that eating is a sin. Right? When we say that physical pleasures are a cherpa, I think it's a strong jump to say sin. I think it's something that it's a busha, it's an embarrassment, I feel bad about it, but what can I do? You still have to eat. It's like you can't call it a sin. Yeah.
I think we eat to live, and then we're saying we eat to live.
Right.
That's the threshold.
Right. 100%. And I think that it's so clear that the more when we eat too much, and you know it afterwards on a Motzei Shabbos, right? You know that feeling that you're just like, wow, I should not have eaten that much, or I shouldn't have drinking that much. And that Motzei Shabbos, guess what? You're not picking up a sefer to learn, right? Because your brain is mush, or your body just. So you got. If our goal is spiritual pursuits is the main idea, then you gotta keep in mind that what you put into your body affects you. Okay, we're gonna stop here. Let's bench. Yes, this whole thing was a Dvar Torah. Okay, I don't think we have 10. So anybody, did anybody not bench yet? I saw a few early benchers. No, Jake, you want to take it away?